are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen on Wednesday after 5 o'clock and alternate Sundays at 12:30. Today, we are talking to Aaliyah Carroll. This is her first novel, Silence the Echo. And I have to tell you that this novel doesn't really fit into many traditional genres. It's a little bit science fiction, fantasy, historical, and I think a little bit a totally new genre. Climate fiction, science, eco-fiction. Welcome to you, Aaliyah. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I'm just delighted to be here.
What do you think about the genre for your book?
It was difficult for me to choose. Mm-hmm. You have to pick categories when you publish a book. So I chose science fiction and historical fantasy. I also put as the third one, metaphysical and visionary, which is an unusual recent category that's been added. So it's some of that, too.
It is indeed. Mm-hmm. I think maybe our listeners will get a sense of this story if you read a little bit from the prologue. Would you be able to do that?
I would be so pleased to do that. The last ice age on Earth spanned 40,000 years. For much of that time, an extensive polar ice cap covered Canada and the northern tier of the United States, the British Isles, and the greater part of Europe. Periodically, glaciers pushed as far south as France, and steppe tundra bordered the Mediterranean Sea. Much of Earth's water was locked in a frozen state, expanding coastlines and keeping sea levels significantly lower than they are today, perhaps by as much as 400 meters, which is 1,200 feet. Running parallel to the western coasts of Portugal and Morocco was Earth's tallest undersea mountain range, its volcanic peaks exposed as islands. Warm currents from the southern ocean's flowed northward, moderating the climate of a large island and its trailing archipelago. Escaping frozen Europe, a race of red-haired giants found this paradise, calling it Altea. Rain fell reliably on the windward side of the mountains, volcanic soils were fertile, and seafood was abundant. Forests provided wood for boats, and quarries supplied building materials. Over tens of thousands of years, an isolated and homogeneous society industrialized and then mechanized, its steady progress interrupted only by an occasional eruption, earthquake, or landslide. Around the Mediterranean Sea, small settlements came and went with the cycles of advancing and retreating glaciers. It was a struggle to raise food in that cold, dry climate, above what might be fished from shore. Across North Africa, herds of goats and cattle were shepherded by nomads, rainfall there too scarce for crops. Over thousands of years, the ice sheets retreated for the last time, the melt inducing a gradual rise of the seas, overtaking low-lying islands and reducing the breadth of Altea's mainland. By then, the long-lived civilization was technologically advanced. It possessed a formidable navy, the means to relocate its burgeoning population by force, if necessary. What it lacked was an energy source to fuel its resettlement in new environs. Increasing warmth and rainfall in the Mediterranean region spurred the regrowth of woodlands. Agriculture improved and food supplies stabilized. Trade replaced competition for scarce resources. But these emerging ports were no match for a willful empire in need of a new home. One by one, they fell under the flag of Altea. As the rise of the seas accelerated, violent weather raked the coasts and tremors shook the Altean nations. Something disturbed Earth.
We're talking to Aaliyah Carroll today, and that was the prologue to her very interesting book, Silence the Echo. What a great premise, Althea. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That we're looking at now, where we're thinking about the rise of the ocean, mm-hmm. you imagined it happening right after the last ice age.
I did some considerable research into the length of the ice age and the cycles of it, and that it ended precipitously. That was something I had not known, and there's not a good scientific explanation for why it would come to such a sudden close.
Mm-hmm.
So I hypothesized that there was an advanced civilization on Earth at the end of the last ice age, which would have been some 12,000 years ago.
Okay. So Althea is threatened with being covered by the ocean, and more earthquakes are occurring, and this is begins your story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you narrow it down to an organization, an order of people that are trying to salvage all the wisdom from this culture. So it says on your book, gifted young telepaths are recruited from the old clans to learn the ancient physics of time travel. Their mission, teach people of the future how to access a crystalline hall of records. Tell us more about that and how you conceived this place and this order.
Well, as I thought about a civilization that was losing its homeland, I wondered how much thought would be given to preserving the wisdom and the science that had been learned over these 10,000 years of Althea's history, or would there just be a frantic race to move elsewhere safe? I considered that probably there had been an older civilization, some people older than the Alteans who had lived in the other ocean, perhaps of Lemuria. And I shortened that up to the Mu and created a history of the prior civilization. So the Order of the Sun is actually a group of priests, and their mission is to preserve the wisdom of Lemuria, the first civilization on Earth. And they have deposited those early interviews that they had with the original people into a crystalline library. And this is where they continue to add the science wisdom that Althea gains to the total of what humankind has learned over 30,000 years. This record is going to disappear if they don't move it from Althea.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about the crystals later and how you imagine their importance in the story. Also, you talk about as the seas rise and the storms rage, tremors persist. Your main character, Circe, and a clever ally, and I'm not sure whether that's Rain or whether that's Aaron.
That's Aaron.
Okay. They find evidence of an experimental energy production.
Mm-hmm.
Why do the best minds of science accept a catastrophic fate when they ought to intervene in what disturbs the Earth? So these are young people. Tell us about these leading characters and some of the other people that populate your world.
Well, in the Order of the Sun, there is an ability to travel in time, to project one's consciousness beyond one's current realm and look into the future. And they're in a hurry to move the Hall of Records. They figure they have about 100 years before Althean civilization disappears from Earth. This is what they've seen in their time travels. So weighing heavy upon them is the responsibility for preserving the wisdom. They can't do it alone. They are an older order of men and women, but it's been a long time since they have recruited new blood to their organization. They're looking for new ideas. And there is a fringe of surviving matriarchal culture around the Mediterranean Sea. I call it the Mid-Terra in my book.
Mm-hmm.
But these are vestiges of the ancient goddess cultures that have been part of Earth's history for tens of thousands of years, and people continuing to pursue that simple way of life. the priests decide to recruit from those matriarchal clans who are telepathic the new blood that they need to forge a new solution.
Mm-hmm. So you take women's intuition and you take the power of these older clans and you just kind of grow it into something more powerful. It's very exciting to read that.
Thank you.
So there's a lot of history and a lot of cultural knowledge written about in this book. You've got, you know, a lot of underpinnings. So tell us about yourself and your history and what inspired this story.
I had a fascinating experience 30 years ago. I was pregnant with my youngest son, who is 29 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'd always been convinced, really since childhood, that I'd lived during the Atlantis times. I had a neighbor across the street. She was an RN at the hospital where I was going to deliver my child, and she took up studying hypnotherapy. And we were talking over the fence one day, and I said, "Hey, Tammy, could you do a hypnotic age regression on me?" And she said, "What the heck is that?" She had that real practical nurse side to her, you know. I said, "It's where you take someone back by hypnosis to maybe their sixth birthday and then their third birthday, and you can even regress people back into lifetimes they've lived before." And you should have seen the look on her face. She goes, "Not really." I go, "No, really, why don't you ask your instructor?" So a few weeks later, we're talking, and she said, "I did ask my instructor, and there is such a thing, and when do you want to do it?" And I said, "How about now?" So I lived in Kent, Washington. My husband was at work. My sister was visiting from Phoenix. So Tammy came in my living room, and I laid down on the couch, and off I went to this Atlantean lifetime.
Well, that's part of what inspires certain sections of this book. Mm-hmm. Your characters have to, as part of their studies, write a complete bio. And of course, when they start their, you know, late teenage years, but they visit other lives during the course of this book that give them clues as to what's going on in their present time.
Yes.
That's really interesting the way that's woven in. And also let's talk about the crystals now. What importance are the crystals in your story?
They were very important in Atlantean culture from the glimpse I had of a life there, but from the reading that I've done, I think perhaps in this era, the human mind was able to interact with crystals directly, using them more like we use computers now. We have a lot of electronics and technology that allow us to deposit information, retrieve information, but I am postulating that in this time, that knowledge and wisdom and history could be deposited directly from the human mind into crystals.
Mm-hmm. So instead of our iPhones, they have crystals, and they wear crystals, and they use crystals all throughout their days as their library, as their just almost everything. It's pretty incredible. They're all different colors, and there's a lot of beauty in this story as well. You also talk about vision travel and, travel into different times, time travel, but also different places within this created world.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Tell us something that happens in the story that doesn't reveal a whole lot, but is of interest.
Well, part of the fun, I think, is going to school with these young telepaths. They come to Altea, to the Temple of Altea, and they are schooled by particularly two gentlemen who are descendants of the Mu race, the original peoples on Earth. And the ancient physics is actually material that I have studied in this life, drawing it from Seth. And I don't know if you're familiar, but in the 1960s, Jane Roberts, an American author and poet and artist, grew up in New England and married a gentleman who was an artist, and they had quite a creative life together. She was able eventually to channel an entity called Seth, And there are books and books and books that were dictated by Seth through Jane Roberts' body to her husband, Rob. And the first year that I was seriously writing the book, I was studying 9 volumes of previously unpublished Seth material. And he talks extensively about using the human mind and spirit to travel in time and space.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Book Lovers Cafe. Here we are at KPTZ 91.9 FM. And I'm talking to author Aaliyah Carroll, who has written a novel called Silence the Echo. And she's put in her novel all kinds of her own studies throughout her life and her experiences throughout her life, which really makes an interesting mix. So there's also some great healing that happens in this story. I love your vision of people being able to take care of each other and actually impart their energy into being able to heal their bodies. Tell us about that.
Well, particularly in the story, there is a tragedy in Circe's background. And that is, out of all of these earth changes, her mother was caught in a tsunami at a port city near where Circe grew up and was gravely injured. And part of the story that weaves through is that her mother recovered because a healer was sent from the Order of the Sun to assist her. So there's a little story about that. But even more interesting, I think, is the catching up that the mother and daughter do on a visit home when Circe's been with the priests in Altea for a period of time, but goes home to visit and has a conversation with her mother about what really happened to her. And some of this comes out of my personal experience of near death. And incredibly, about a year after I had this hypnotic age regression, I was hospitalized for cardiac tests. And during the tests, I launched out of my body. I could see my body in orange light on the table. I could see the doctors working on me, but I was away. And I had a sense of turning and moving towards the classic dark tunnel with the brilliant light at the end, feeling a tremendous sense of acceleration as I began moving towards the light. And I have to say, it was the most peaceful environment that I've ever known in this life. I had no worries. I had an infant and a toddler and a husband, and I gave them not a thought. I was enveloped in the most profound peace without a worry. And then all of a sudden, slam, I was back in my body with 20 doctors and a defibrillator on my chest and my eyes open. But I was filled with the most wondrous amazement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you write about that in this story.
I do.
And that comes through. I think there's a lot of things in this book that accelerate where we are now or what we're thinking about and studying now. Mm-hmm. One of the examples that it brought to mind is it's not all mysticism. It's also, you talk about geology, you talk about electromagnet forces, magnetic forces. You also talk about advances in technology. Yeah. And so tell me where that part of the story comes from.
Oh, you know, I was thinking that you might ask me that. Mm-hmm. I come from a family of nerds.
Uh-huh.
I'm a social worker by profession. My dad was one of the very first computer programmers with IBM and then with Motorola back in the 60s. Both of my kids are software developers, one at Microsoft, one at Oracle. My middle brother was the biggest nerd you'd ever want to meet. I don't know that I got so much of the I got much more personality and humanitarian feeling and intuition probably than all those men in my family. But what I did come with is the science. Mm-hmm. I read science fiction as a child. My dad read all the classics and handed them to me. So along with the mysticism that my mother inculcated was the beautiful science fiction from my father.
Oh, great. That's really good. And I don't want to let you go without talking about the romance in mm-hmm. this story as well. Because, you know, there have been many stories, you know, adventure stories and mysteries that have an element of romance in them. Mm-hmm. But I think that the way your female protagonist is developed, she has that new word agency. She knows about her feminine power. She knows that she can have an important part of what's going on in terms of the development and the saving of this society. And so she's willing to make, you know, she's willing to give up things in her personal life. So talk about, you know, Cersei and her decisions that she has to make in her relationships and how she grows in the book. She really changes.
Well, she comes with a mission. Her grandfather, the man that she considers grandfather, is head of the Order of the Sun. She doesn't see a lot of him, but he's been an inspiration throughout her life. He's the reason she comes to Altea, leaves her family and her clan behind, where she is destined to be priest of her matriarchal clan. She turns her back on that in favor of a more worldly mission. So coming to class for 2 years with 9 other telepaths from vastly different cultures, of course, the first thing that happens is one of her classmates falls in love with her, and she falls in love with something, with someone else. Mm-hmm. So there is a triangle going on kind of through these students' couple of years together. But it's difficult for her to choose between these two men. One, she would consider a brilliant scientist, a brilliant priest in the making, someone who is enormously sensitive to Earth and who she admires. The other man is a person with a past, much older than her, mysterious, a dark horse, but the physical attraction is just beyond anything she's ever experienced. She's a young woman. Mm-hmm. So lots of drama and some trauma around living between these two men who are powerful in their own rights.
Okay, we won't tell anymore.
We won't tell anymore. Okay.
But also, then later on in the book, there is incredible discussion, kind of a picture of the politics within these scientific communities. Mm-hmm. And you do that so well. You know, you like to think about people that are all working for good or towards one goal, not being in competition. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of that in the story as well, isn't there?
There really is. The Order of the Sun is thousands of years old. And it, of course, is evolving in the modern era of those times. There are several different leaders while Cersei is affiliated with the temple. And the first one's her grandfather, who she understands and admires. And the second is a very wonderful woman who brings some things to the order that Cersei hasn't seen. She admires her very much. Exemplar Rika puts Cersei very early into a situation where she is a secretary, so to speak, to a committee. And this committee is supposed to be looking at the data about Earth and supposed to be keeping the order safe as these geological disasters continue to come, and most of all to be giving the timeline of how soon we have to get the records preserved. Mm-hmm. So early in her student experience, she is sitting with powers, much greater than herself, greater than any folk she's ever known or met, and she's expected to behave gracefully. She rises to that occasion. She begins to demonstrate some real brains, brawn, intuition, understanding, and a tremendous drive within her to be faithful to what the order is trying to do.
Mm-hmm. That is really an interesting part of the book for me. And also, I wanted to talk to you about some of your favorite books that have inspired you and that you would recommend to our listeners.
Oh, and I do have some strong favorites.
Okay.
The Mists of Avalon by Marion Zimmer Bradley was mm-hmm. published in 1983. My mother-in-law gave it to me, and I let it sit on the shelf for 3 more years before I picked it up. And boy, did I regret that. Mm-hmm. I was changed to a pagan by the reading of that book. I was raised Catholic. I had long since let that go, but I saw myself in the Mists of Avalon as one of these witches and mm-hmm. wise women. Mm-hmm. Tremendously influential and a saga that I sought more or less to imitate. It was a time when things were changing very drastically in England, when Christianity had come and made its mark on a Druid and pagan culture. The other book that has inspired me greatly in the finishing up of my novel was The Agony and the Ecstasy by Irving Stone. And this one published in 1961, and I had never read it. And I got to kind of a low point a year ago, Christmas, with the book. And I just didn't know how I was going to finish it. I felt I had to, but I didn't know how. So I read The Agony and the Ecstasy over 4 weeks of Christmas. And I thought, oh my God, if Michelangelo can survive what he did to bring those beautiful, lifelike people out of marble, surely I can finish this novel.
Oh, those are two great choices. And I have to recommend them as well. Well, our time's up with this fascinating person. Thank you so much for joining me today. And all of you, join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and you can listen on the podcast page if you came in the middle. Please go to our website, kptz.org. Thanks, Jacob, over there in the engineer booth, and Carl Allen as the editor. We'll see you next time.